Well, very good. I will, Andrea, you want to do a roll call?
Absolutely. We have Wayne Bennion, Andrea Pearson, Clint Smith, Norm Searle, Robert Dandoy, Mark Shepard, Blair Camp, Rob Dolly, Terry Newell, Beth Holbrook, Alma Haskell, Jim Harvey, Mike Gailey, Ben Wethrich, Christine Kump, Julie Fulmer, Ann Granato, Dirk Timothy, Rosie Hernandez, Bryce Bird, Brad Palmer, Andrew Gruber, Kent Anderson, and I am not sure who is from Sandy City.
Very good. Somebody from Sandy City, you know, let Andrea know who you are. Send her a message. So we know.
It's Ryan Kump. Okay, great. Okay. And it looks like we've had Shul Mission join us as well. And Ben Hewitt. Thanks. We're good. We have a quorum.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrea. I'm probably glad to have everybody here with us. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedules today to be with us. Do we have any public here for public comment? It didn't sound like there was anybody online when you read through.
No, okay. and please have approval for the minutes.
Yep. We need we need an approval for the minutes from April 15th. I got it there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Clint Smith, I'll make a motion to approve.
Second, Searle.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. We'll count that as approved. And I'm going to go ahead and yield my time for the chair's report to Miranda. Is she on here?
Yes.
I'm here. Miranda, you want to give us an update on the federal transportation funding?
Yes, absolutely. So let me just share my screen real quick. I just have a few slides. I'm going to keep this kind of brief. But one thing I kind of just want to get into is there are two. Sorry, let me just get this up. Okay. So as you all are likely aware, there's seems like right now there's always a lot going on with federal infrastructure funding. You know, over the last few months, you all have likely heard different rumblings of what's happening in Congress right now.
Careful, watch them.
So I kind of want to just break it down really simply for everyone to kind of keep it high level, because I, even kind of being in this, it can be kind of confusing, everything that's going on. So what's going on is there are two different efforts going on federally right now, whether that's with the Biden administration, but then also within Congress. So we have two efforts. The first is the reauthorization of the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Act, or what was formerly known as the FAST Act. So that bill will expire in September of this year, and Congress is busy working on putting together their proposals for this bill. So it's a 5-year funding authorization for transportation. So that includes highways, transit, safety, and largely not only does UDOT and UTA's funding come from this, but so does WFRC's funding for our important programs that you all work with, like the like STP funding, CMAQ, TAP, etc. And so where that effort is at right now is there are currently two different proposals out there. The Senate has their proposal, and then the House, and you know, they're kind of in different phases. The House bill, the Invest Act, is a full title, meaning it has all of the different highway, transit, safety provisions within it already. Whereas the Senate EPW bill that they've put out there, they still need the transit and safety pieces brought into that as well, but from other committees. So we still need final votes on these bills, and you know, ultimately they'll come to a conference committee and then pass a final authorization bill, likely within the next couple months. So while you have this effort, you also have the federal infrastructure package. So this is what we first knew it as the American Jobs Plan, which came out of the White House, Biden's infrastructure proposal of sorts. And it's kind of been moving forward and then installing a little bit because there have been other proposals or counter proposals that different congressional leaders have brought forward. The Senate Republicans were in pretty heavy negotiations with the Biden administration for a few weeks. And it looks like while those have stalled, President Biden seems to be now working somewhat exclusively with a bipartisan group of senators on their infrastructure proposal, which was actually just released just yesterday. And so these two different paths forward right now are very separate, but in the future could potentially overlap a little bit, right? Like, with the ultimate reauthorization passage, they could pull in pieces of the Biden infrastructure package or the Senate proposal, depending on how far negotiations get with that. So anyways, there's a lot going on here. One thing that I did want to know, I didn't pull up, the amount of funding that's coming in these bills for the surface transportation reauthorization. But one thing that might be interesting for this group is the House actually solicited earmark requests from House members, and they have included some Utah projects based on proposals from our congressional delegation. And so I've included those here. Some of you may have already seen these, and I think what's important to note is that it's not certain that these will continue to stay in the bill. They could be pulled out. We're still not quite sure where the Senate is going to be at with earmark requests in their proposal, in their final proposal. And in the end, it still is unsure if earmarks will stay in or stay out. But it was good to see that a handful of Utah projects were included in the House's proposal, which you can see here. And so just kind of to wrap up, because there's a lot happening with this, what does this mean for Utah? And maybe more specifically, what does this mean for this group or for WFRC in general? And I think, you could look at this in a couple ways. One way is that like, oh, great, we're going to have a lot more funding, transportation funding coming to the state. And that may or may not be the case, right? But I think what's important to know is that whatever increase that we do see coming, right, and in both proposals for the House and Senate, there are increases to some of our important and key programs. But the funding that does come to Utah will allow us to continue to utilize our existing programs and processes that we already have established, right? The work that this group does on prioritizing transportation projects for the state. And I think that's what's most important here to realize is that there's opportunity coming forward and being able to use that additional funding to continue to support the processes that we have in place, I think is what will be key. And so anyways, with that, I wanted to keep it brief. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask. But otherwise, I'm happy to take questions.
Well, thank you, Miranda. Appreciate all the work that you're doing. Any questions for Miranda while we got her here? All right, you're off the hook.
Mayor Shepherd, yes. I don't have a question. Can I add just a touch on to the end of Miranda's presentation there, which I appreciate her giving? And some of you, are pretty deeply involved in this. Of course, the folks at UDOT and UTA are working on this a lot. I know Kevin Cromar, who's a member of this committee, has had dialogue about the CMAQ program with folks in Washington and others, but just maybe just 2 points to build on what Miranda was saying. First of all, as she noted, one of the big challenges is that we don't know, and there has been no agreement about the funding sources for these proposals. So while we are, there's a long way to go, I think, in figuring out that key question. However, even though that's a tough question to answer, and there's a lot of focus on the partisanship and the struggle and the process that's going on right now, we are at a great point in that there is broad, general, bipartisan agreement about the importance and the value of investing in infrastructure. And so when you sort of step back, we're in a very positive place when it comes to federal infrastructure, and that everybody is talking about investing in infrastructure, making that investment multimodal. So state road, local road, transit, active transportation, and doing it over a multi-year period. So stability and predictability for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. That's very consistent with the principles that we in total in Utah have advocated for. Now, what that means is, I don't think anybody should be expecting like, oh, they'll pass a bill and all of a sudden Utah will get, you know, billions of dollars. Here you go. Here's billions of dollars. It won't work that way, probably. It will work the way that our federal transportation program has worked and we've advocated for it to work, which is distribution by formula and stability and predictability over time. And my last point then would be that we, Utah, are in a really good position. I'm emphasizing something I think Miranda was saying. We do, collectively, we do a great job in Utah of planning for and identifying the priority transportation investments that are needed. So we are ready to put federal resources to use in a way that we've planned and prioritized and not have it be a mad scramble. And this has been borne out over decades past that we've handled and really put federal money to very, very good use. So we're ready for that again. And like Miranda said, the work that this group does is part of that, reviewing projects, adopting plans and adopting programs. So I don't know where we'll end up, but I'm feeling generally quite optimistic about what's happening in Washington on transportation infrastructure, at least. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it. Well, all right, that takes us on to item number 4, which is the Transportation Improvement Program. We had board modifications during the board meeting in May. Those are in your packet. Were there any questions or concerns with the modifications that were made in May? Okay, seeing none, then that's going to bring us to item B or 4B, which is the modifications again now to the 2021-2026 TIP. And I'm going to go ahead and turn the time over to Ben and let him dig us into this one.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. I can share my screen here. As many of you are well aware, and maybe for a quick review for those that this may be new to or who just enjoy seeing this acronym pop up on your screen, the Transportation Improvement Program is something that we, at least I here in the office think it's probably the most important thing we do, but that's coming from an unbiased opinion and only the one guy over here in the corner office. But it's actually a pretty big deal. Transportation Improvement Program is a 6-year program of the highway and transit projects. It's for our urban areas, which essentially go from Brigham City all the way down to Utah County lines. It's the projects that are funded with federal, state, and local programs, and it's for all of the cities and the counties, UDOT and UTA. Transportation Improvement Program will implement the long-range plans. That's our highway, transit, and active transportation projects and priorities that have been identified. It'll help us meet the short-range needs along the Wasatch Front, as well as provide for the maintenance of our existing transportation system. And because the TIP is so dynamic, today there are 3 items on the agenda. There was the report on the board modification, There's a new board modification that's coming before Transcom, and then there will be a request for a release for the draft 2022-2027 Transportation Improvement Program, as well as the air quality conformity analysis for our public review and comment period. And as Mayor Shepherd reviewed with each of us, there was a board modification before the council. There's a copy of the signed resolution in the meeting materials, and attached to that resolution are the three tables that identify the projects, a report of that board modification. And at this time, we have an opportunity to present information to Transcom for our board modification number 7, since this 2021-2026 TIP was approved by the Wasatch Front Regional Council last August. In your meeting materials is a copy of the resolution, and attached to that resolution are the tables that will identify each of these board modifications or each of these projects that are being requested as part of the board modification. We'll review each one of those projects. The very first one we will look at is a project in Weber County. This is the Ogden WSU Bus Rapid Transit, which will go from the Ogden Front Runner Station to the McKay D Hospital. The BRT combines the capacity and speed of the light rail with the lower cost of construction of an integrated bus system. And once this system is completed, the Ogden WSU BRT will provide riders an electric bus from the Ogden Front Runner Station through the downtown along a designated or a dedicated bus lane in the center of the road. This particular section of Harrison Boulevard, you'll see, as a reconfiguration. You'll have several upgraded stations along there. There is 11 electric buses. There will be signal prioritization on 19 signals along the corridor. You'll have a headway of about 10 to 15 minutes. And of course, it will be free for the first 3 years. Now, because of increased cost materials and construction costs, there is a need to add an additional $3.2 million to this project, giving us a total project cost of $120+ million. This additional funding is made available through an increase of the 5309 Small Start funds from the Federal Transit Administration. The next project we will look at is a project in the Davis-Weber County. This is on US 89, Farmington to I-84. This is converting US 89 in Davis County to a 6-lane freeway, which has brought with it several unexpected challenges in regards to the utilities, the abilities for the city to inspect the road improvements and the utilities, and there's also been additional right-of-way issues. Earlier, Commissioner Harvey was referencing those who hadn't traveled 89 ought to. This is just a couple of pictures just to show what the existing conditions and the significant need for this project. But as mentioned before, when you're converting an existing system into a freeway system, there are a lot of unknowns that come into play. In order to award the construction contract when it was awarded and to work under, there were a lot of challenges, and that required that the use of that project or the use of the funding for the project be utilized almost completely, meaning that the contingency funds that have been set aside for unexpected things was used. And as this project continues forward, I have a couple of illustrations of the future design of the project, taking it into separated facilities at intersections, for full interchanges, the frontage road systems. Anyway, there's a request as the locals work along with the department to realign local roads and add this into the system that this project be made whole in its contingency funding. So there's a request to add an additional $30 million to this project to replenish the contingency balance. That way, if there's any unexpected changes, there's no further delays to the project, increasing the project cost overall. So the additional funds comes from the additional TIF funds that were made available through programming efficiency, as well as the unprogrammed TIF funds in the program. The next, that brings us to the next table, and that table identifies three projects. The first project there is along the UTA service area. This is a request from the Utah Transit Authority for a public transportation COVID-19 award that was received on January 19th, 2021. Federal Transit Administration announced that 37 projects in 35 states and one territory would receive a share of approximately $15.8 million in funding to support strategies that would develop, deploy, and demonstrate solutions that improve the operations and efficiencies of transit agencies and enhance rider mobility during the COVID-19 public health emergency and overall improving for future use. Utah Transit Authority will receive funding to extend its contactless payment software to include the e-vouchers. This will allow contactless payments with UTA mobile fares as well as transportation network companies. These funds are made available through the Federal Transit Administration on Section 5312 grant. It brings 508,000 plus of new funds with UTA's contribution of 30,000, giving us a total project of 538,000 plus. The next project is a project in the Salt Lake area. This is a request from UDOT. This is in the Northwest Quadrant. This is the West Rail Project construction. This will construct a new rail connection for the Salt Lake Garfield and the Western Railway Company, or SLGW. Federal Rail Administration on the Northwest Quadrant West Interchange Project. This particular area is part of our Inland Port Project, and the intent of this project is to construct a new alignment to the Union Pacific Rail Line from the short line, from the SLGW's short line to the UP main line. This is a total project of about almost $24 million. This new funding, it was a grant received by UDOT, will be $13.6 million plus, and the SLGW is bringing about $11.2 million, giving us that total project value. The next project on this is also in Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County. This is a request from UDOT. This is for SR-201. This is a drainage improvement on SR-201 between the mileposts of 0.8 and 1.1. It's experienced a degradation of the pavement section due to the water seeping into the subgrade. The project will add several cross culverts to allow the water to drain from the facility and avoid any future ponding on the road. And the road will also be reconstructed by milling off 7 inches of pavement and replacing it with 7 inches of new asphalt. This project will be funded with available balance from the Region 2's Transportation Solutions Program. That brings us to the last table, or the last project to be modified in the Transportation Improvement Program. This is a request from the Department of Transportation. This will address the pedestrian access along the Park Lane bridges, or the construction of a pedestrian facility that'll cross the Union Pacific Railroad tracks I-15 and US 89. Pedestrians access along the Park Lane bridges consists of those three major obstacles, the Union Pacific Railroad tracks, the I-15 and US 89. There's regional trails on both sides. There's a front runner station on the west side of I-15 and Lagoon on the east side. And it just makes for a very dangerous location for pedestrians and bicyclists and motorists all at one time. What UDOT proposes to do, here's a couple of pictures of the existing facility where motorists travel at a near freeway speeds and with a lot of moving or contact points with turning movements. UDOT is proposing that a structure be constructed that would tie into the existing facilities that would alleviate any contact points. To do this, UDOT is proposing that they construct three bridges for pedestrian and bicyclists, one pedestrian bicyclist culvert, and then that would tie into the existing facilities in and around the area. This would provide much safer conditions for any of the pedestrians and bicyclists, as well as for the traveling motorists. The intent is to take the funds. This project was currently a part of the West Davis Corridor or the West Davis Highway Project, which is, we'll talk about in a few minutes here, but move the funds for this project to the Shepherd Lane Interchange Project. That would allow this project to move forward in a little quicker, and it would bring all of the resources closer together that will be taking place on the Shepherd Lane Interchange. So it's to transfer the funds from the West Davis, the $20 million from the West Davis Corridor Project, to the total the Shepherd Lane Project, which will give us a total project cost of over $109 million. That is all of the projects in this board modification. Are there any questions?
Well, thanks, Ben. Let's take a motion first on this one and with the board modifications, then we'll move on to air quality and the other release draft. So
wonderful.
Board, do we have a motion on this?
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion that we accept that those presentations as presented.
Second, this is Mike Gailey.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Hey, we'll take that as unanimous. Any opposed? Just in case. All right. Ben, let's go back to you for the rest of for item number C.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is an exciting opportunity. So today we'd like to request that Transcom approve that the draft 2022-2027 Transportation Improvement Program and its associated air quality conformity analysis go out for public review and comment. In a little more detail on the Transportation Improvement Program, it's a list of projects that include new construction, rehab and maintenance of our existing facilities, safety and intelligent transportation system improvements, transit operations and maintenance, and as well as pedestrian and bicycle projects. This document represents millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars. It also represents thousands of jobs throughout all of our communities, economic growth and development, mobility and access, actually the all around improvement or the quality of life, but most important, probably the preservation of life as these projects are implemented and as we continue to grow and develop along the Wasatch Front. By law, the Transportation Improvement Program must be financially constrained. There are 6 years identified in the Transportation Improvement Program. The first 4 years are what we refer to as programmed years. Those 4 years must be financially constrained. The out 2 years are what we refer to as concept development years. And Wasatch Front utilizes those out 2 years also as programmed years. So our TIP for the programs of Wasatch Front overseas is financially constrained for the 6 years. But by law, those first 4 years need to be financially constrained. It also must conform to air quality. So the air quality analysis that is performed to determine that these projects, yeah, they do indeed conform. This document must be reviewed by the public and then approved by the regional council. So in order to help the public, we've developed the tables that first identify those programs that the Wasatch Front Regional Council has a responsibility to program. That's our SDP program, our CMAC program, our TAP program, all of those projects that this body recommends to the regional council for improving and including in the draft transportation improvement program. Also included in that document is all the other federal programs and the state programs that UDOT has a responsibility to coordinate the programming of. Also, in addition to that, is those programs that UTA has a responsibility to take the lead in coordinating the programming of. So we take those tables of all of those projects and we include that with the air quality memorandum, which identifies the conformity analysis for the 2022-2027 Transportation Improvement Program, and we make them available for the public to review. Now, today we're here on the 17th, and it is our request that beginning on the 26th, we begin our public review and comment process and conclude that on the 31st of July. During that time, we will have two public open houses. We intend to be in person this year, and we'll have one of these locations in the Ogden-Layton urban area, potentially up there at the 24th or at the Intermodal Center. And the other one here, probably in the Salt Lake West Valley urban area, we'll probably have that one over at the main intermodal center here in Salt Lake. On the near the end of the month, the 28th, is when we will meet with their technical advisory committees, which is made up of all of the city engineers and public works. And we will review with them the information that we've received to date for their review and input. That information then will be brought to Transcom along with any remaining comments or information we receive over the conclusion of the public review and comment period. Transcom then will have the opportunity to review all of this information and then make recommendations to the Regional Council for their approval. Regional Council will meet on the 26th. After the Regional Council approves the 2022-2027 Transportation Improvement Program, we coordinate our efforts with UDOT and the other MPOs of the state, and that information is submitted to Federal Highways and Federal Transit for their review during the month of September, with the intent to have a brand new and improved Transportation Improvement Program 2022-2027 ready to roll on October 1st. Part of our opportunity to bring this information to the public is available through our website. But not only is the information that we will provide through the tables and other, we also have an integrated map. This gives the public an opportunity to actually sit down in the comforts of their own home or in their office or for family night or whatever they want to do, sit down and they can go right in and they can pinpoint a project, they can look at the project, understand details of the project, and or leave a comment if they desire. In that information on that interactive map, we'll identify all of the projects along the Wasatch Front, within the Wasatch Front urbanized area from Brigham City all the way down to the Utah County line. We will also include those projects that are part of the Wasatch Front in the Morgan as well as Tooele and the outerlying areas of Box Elder County. But the projects that'll be identified will be these brand new STP projects that this body has approved and recommended, Maybe just to refresh your memory on two, there's one in the Marriott Slaterville. This is on 17th South to reconstruct with some minor widening and removal of a very dangerous corner. And with plans to work with the city, the project sponsor, and Weber County to make this project happen. Another one is in the Salt Lake urban area on West Valley. This is to reconstruct 3650 South, which is also a narrow two-lane facility with sidewalk on the north side, nothing on the south side. This project will reconstruct to a three-lane facility with shoulders, including bike lanes, curb gutter, and sidewalks on both sides of the road. Also included in this will be those projects that were identified in the CMAQ program. And it'll identify those projects that were identified in the TAP as we move through and talked about the specific safe routes to school, trails, and off-road type of facilities for our active transportation. In addition to those projects, will be the projects that have been identified by the Transportation Commission, or UDOT, through the TIF program, or the Statewide Transportation Investment Funds. Here's a list of all those projects that have been approved. Here's a list of all the projects in the TIF program that are currently in design. Here's a list of those projects that are currently under construction. Also included in the TIF will be the brand new TIF highway projects that have been approved by the Transportation Commission through the process and included in a draft TIF in the STIP. In addition to those projects that have been approved this past legislative session to be included in the Transportation Improvement Program. Maybe to highlight one project just for fun, because it just recently got underway in a big way. This is the West Davis Corridor. I mean, who can't help get excited over big tractors pushing a lot of dirt? And as you know, the West Davis is a new 16-mile, four-lane divided highway that will extend between the I-15 Legacy Parkway Junction, which is approximately Glover's Lane in Farmington, and the future extension of SR 193 in West Point. Now, isn't that awesome? Trucks and dirt. But this project, it's a freeway style, or will include freeway style interchanges on and off ramps, will be built at the Legacy I-15 Farmington, 950 North in Farmington, 200 North in Kaysville, 2700 West in Layton, 2000 West in Syracuse, and Antelope Drive. It will also include more than 10 miles of trail that will interconnect, bringing the Immigrant Trail, connecting it into the DNRG Rail Trail, the Legacy Trail, and tying all of these projects together.
Ben?
Yes.
Ben, just to, for our friends in the South, we just need to be, I think it needs to be clear that in Farmington, he said Glover's Lane, and not Lover's Lane. Just some of you were a little confused there. And so just being specific.
Thank you, Commissioner, thank you. Other projects that'll be included on this in the TIP document that they can review are those projects that identify for maintenance and rehab on our existing systems. Other projects would be safety and intelligent transportation system improvements. And there's the transit operations and maintenance projects, as well as the pedestrian and bicycle projects, along with transportation improvement program. So this would include all of the information, but the important part is that this is a big deal. There are hundreds of millions of dollars in this document, and we're requesting at this point that Transcom allow us to take this document out for public review and comment during the month of July, beginning on June 26. Are there any questions?
Well, thanks, Ben. It's now I know, you know, what I'm going to be doing with my family nights. So yeah, since you've recommended that, I'll gather the grandkids around and we'll jump online and It'll probably take us a few weeks, but you know, we'll go through all of it.
Awesome.
Thanks. Well, we do need action on this one. We need a motion to release the draft 2022-2027 TIP and air quality conformity analysis for public comment.
Mayor Shepherd, can I ask one quick question of Ben?
You sure can.
Yeah, Ben, I was struck by recently in Cottonwood Heights, there was a group that came together. They weren't happy with something that was already approved for the expansion of Wasatch Boulevard. And I was just thinking about, you know, when those public comments come in on this, obviously the agency will respond to those comments respectfully and appropriately. But I wonder if we could do a better job on the education side as well. A lot of times there can be some misinformation when opponents oppose these projects. And sometimes they are well-informed. But do we have any plans that beyond just responding to comments, maybe doing some education or outreach to provide more information on what these projects entail and why they're being pursued?
That's a great comment. Maybe a couple of responses, and then if there's others that would like to chime in. First and foremost, we're always improving on this, and we recognize that sometimes there's so much information that we overwhelm people or blow right past them. One thing that we've been implementing is when we receive the public review and comments, every month, each of the regions have what they have a program management type meeting. And in those meetings, when the regions are identifying or talking about projects that are up and coming or projects that they're working on, we will bring this information or these comments up for their discussion. And for there are times that we've had multiple board modifications due to public input, but we are trying to do a lot better job at that. I know UDOT has taken on a champion role to really try to educate and help the public. Each time a project is moving forward, due to federal regulations, there is a public comment and review for that specific project that really goes into more detail for public input. But we are always looking at ways to improve and to better educate the public as well as coordinate good ideas to make better projects for the limited resources we have.
Ben, I want to briefly supplement that and then maybe ask UDOT and UTA. I know we've got several folks, Terry Newell, the deputy director of UDOT, Beth Holbrook, trustee from UTA. Because Kevin, I think the question that you're asking is a really good one. It's not just what do we do with public comments, but how do we make sure that information is shared early on so that there's a good understanding of the various factors that are involved in making decisions about projects. And part of that, I mean, the conversation that you noted on Wasatch Boulevard, there has been a lot of talk about that particular project, concerns expressed by residents. In a way, I actually think it's illustrative of a project that there has been a lot of information that has been provided, a potentially significant project that goes through a required public engagement process. So that's perhaps an example, not necessarily of a project where there's unanimity of opinion, but a project where information has been shared and provided very proactively. And so that happens generally with the work that we do, but it's actually the public education comes not just from WFRC, but from UDOT, UTA, and I dare say the cities and the counties that are participating in this call and projects that they are involved in are also doing outreach to their communities. The big challenge, this will be the last thing I'll say on this, one of the big challenges with this kind of outreach is that it is human nature oftentimes to not really get engaged until something is actually like the bulldozers show up where the project starts. So you can put out as many notices as you can about something that will happen, and then people are busy with their day-to-day lives. So it's a real struggle actually in every arena for future issues to get the public engaged, but we're certainly working at it. Terry, Beth, do you want to add anything to this? Kevin's good comment.
Sure. I just want to say that this isn't the only time the public has the ability to see this list. To speak to what Andrew said, every project has some form of public outreach on it. And I think the one you talked about specifically is going through a very extensive environmental document process. So there is a lot of opportunity for the public to get engaged. And I think depending on the type of project it is, we'll either do more or less public involvement depending on the needs. That's always something that we're glad to be told of any needs the public has and make sure that we reach out in whatever way we need to. I think we're all always trying to do that the best way we can. And it is sometimes hard at the planning level to get people engaged in a project. But I would say, yeah, there's a lot more outreach maybe that you don't see when you look at these lists when they're all combined together. But there's a lot that goes on behind that.
I just I wanted to echo what Andrew and Terry both said. The interesting element of all of this is that you are in essence having this human nature differential added to this whole process. And I just wanted to articulate something about the Ogden BRT as a recent example of a public engagement. So this project was pre-COVID and then now currently post-COVID or post-COVID-ish. And the elements of discussion really started with these outreach that we hired an outreach coordinator, Bill Knowles, to go in and talk to those business leaders that are going to be significantly impacted or somewhat impacted by this project once it was actually defined. And prior to the definition, obviously it's really difficult to have anything, you know, against a project that's articulated. But once it was actually identified, Bill's job was to go out and engage all of these business owners and get them to keep coming. And he would engage with the city as well as UTA, as well as these business leaders and bring them all together on monthly coordination meetings. And I know that there are a lot of projects that go through a similar process. Again, depends on where they're at, but we want to make sure that as UTA, we are being as transparent, as communicative as possible. And we know there's always ways to improve that. We did find that we actually had some increased participation during COVID because it was an online, it was a simple, easier access for people to say, oh, I don't like this, or here's my issue and articulate that. But we're constantly looking to try to make sure that we are engaging as much as possible. But again, it is a great question because I do think that until we can coordinate even more communications and interact, we are just kind of talking to the people who have a specific issue as opposed to the general public. So.
Well, thanks both of you, appreciate that. Okay, we need a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to approve the draft TIP and air quality conformity determination for public review and comment.
Mr. Chair, Clint Smith, I will second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, well, that passes.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ben. Appreciate all that. That takes us to our local government project report. And we've got Matt Hewish and Ryan Kump here from Sandy to talk to us about their learning experience, we'll call it. So, guys, I'm going to turn the time over to you.
So, thank you. I'll go quickly. I think I was supposed to introduce the project briefly and then mostly to introduce Ryan Kump, our city engineer. So, my name is Matt Hewish. I'm the chief administrative officer in Sandy. I'm not near as informed or as entertaining as Ben, but I'll do my best. I think Ryan's going to mostly talk in detail and specifics about, about the project on 90th there in I-15. But this is a really important project for Sandy because of its location. It's, as many of you may know, I don't know, we've actually got a really big master plan all along the freeway there. It's called a Cairns District, and it's broken up into sub-districts. And so the furthermost northern part of the Cairns district is called the Stadium District. And that's, of course, around the Real Salt Lake Stadium and whatnot. And so this intersection that Ryan's going to talk about is really the gateway or the entry point into that stadium district and to the stadium itself. So super important. And of course, its location to I-15. Someone once told me that 90th South and I-15 was the busiest intersection in the state. I don't know if that's true, but anyway, it has its fair share of traffic volume. And so we got to get this right. So anyway, I think Ryan will also talk about this a little further than me, but we're really grateful for the kind of community partnerships that we formed and with some other jurisdictions and some public-private partnerships there to actually pull this project off. And it was unique and took a little bit of work, but turned out great. So with that, I'll turn the time over to Ryan, who really can give you what you're here to hear. He's our city engineer. He's been with Sandy 19 years. And when I asked him, how would you like to me to introduce you, since his director and assistant and the deputy director are out of town and he's in charge of public works this week, he said, just tell him I'm trying to do my best not to burn the buildings down while everybody's out of town. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ryan.
Well, and to feed off that, we did burn our building down back in 2018. So, but yeah, we are excited. I'd like to thank Wayne and the WFRC for the chance to introduce this project to you. He asked me to give a 5 or 10 minute presentation primarily on how we work with our partners to fund this project. So in 5 or 10 minutes, I'll give you the 5-year history of this intersection. Let's see here, make sure I'm on my right screen. Hopefully you're seeing this slide as I've got it pulled up. Quick outline, just the genesis of the project, the purpose and need, our funding sources and history, and then the current progress on the intersection. So, we considered this as phase 7 of our Monroe Street master plan. And this is a desire to build a 5-lane facility from 106 South to 90th South. That's part of our stadium block in our Cairns district. And this intersection is the northern gateway into all of the redevelopment Sandy's working on here between State Street and I-15. This map shows the 7 phases from 106 South that you've got down here on the south side. I've got north to the left. And we've managed to build around Sandy City Hall, which is right here, these 3 sections in green. Future sections that we will be working on is the last south leg that connects through Southtown Mall to 106th. 2 segments that will be future segments up through the stadium block. There's Rio Tinto Stadium. And then this project right here is the Northern Gateway. Monroe's being reconstructed about a half mile of it, but primarily to get the 90th South Monroe intersection done correctly. We need dual lefts in all directions from 90th. And in order to pull that off, we have to widen Monroe. So there's receiving lanes for all that. Of course, you can see the 90th South I-15 interchange right here as well. And obviously the volume of traffic, the capacities that we have flowing through here, both to feed our downtown district and also just pass through traffic is tremendous. So we needed as much throughput as we could get. And that's the genesis of the project and why it was so important for the city to get this project off the ground. Just a quick slide on the stadium block master plan here with Rio Tinto Stadium. The city has a robust master plan to bring in redevelopment for this area, truly build a new city center with a lot of mid-rise residential, commercial, some retail. Obviously, everything's dynamic, and with the pandemic, some of our land uses will change, but the idea to bring density here hasn't. This is just a really quick slide of I-15's project that they are wrapping up. They recently completed a CD system, collector distributor, with a brand new bridge over 90th. That CD took away one of our safety valve roads, a little tiny slip road we had here. So with the elimination of this road it made it even more important for us to increase capacity at Monroe. Purpose and needs, it was important to do. I'll skip through some of this. This is an overview of what the project widening was. Just for a quick example, as you can see just how substantial it is. Here where it's dark, that was the existing pavement width. Here where it's a little bit lighter, that's the amount of widening we had in this project. That's about 40 feet of take into a Larry H. Miller used car dealership. There was also a bunch of take here against this apartment building. And then similar takes all the way through here. This is a at-home store. This was a Holiday Oil. This Holiday Oil was a complete take for the project. We intentionally designed this to be completely built out towards this corner. So there's no acquisition on this corner. The Holiday Oil took the brunt of the acquisition. We figured we'd acquire one gas station and minimize the impacts on everyone else. Another unique aspect of this project down here at the very south end, this is a through turn signal. Most through turns, like if you're familiar with the one in Draper, 123rd South and 9th and State Street, they've eliminated the left turn movements in the main intersection and then put the through turns up. We are not changing the left turn movements on Monroe and 90th. You'll be able to make a left turn from any direction. The purpose of this through turn was to facilitate business access. In order to get the proper stacking that we're projecting we'll need, during PM peak, we project these dual lefts will back up through all of these business accesses. Obviously, they're very concerned about that. And our solution was to install a raised median the entire length here. They didn't like that idea, but we put a through turn here. And then if you're leaving this commercial district, you come to the through turn, turn around and get back out to the freeway. They actually all got on board with that idea because they know just how bad the stacking and congestion can be in here. And we're very supportive of it through our PR efforts and our acquisition efforts. That was quite a mountain to climb. So that was an innovative solution that got our business community on board with this project, and I think will alleviate a lot of our traffic problems here. Annual impacts of no build just continues to get congested. Funding sources. I think this is the key point that Wayne wanted me to go over. This was a difficult project to get off the ground. It was very expensive. We had a full acquisition of a Holiday Oil station. And I originally was working with UDOT to try to squeeze it into a different project they were doing. But as we got into the design, it quickly became apparent that this was too expensive to roll into a 90th South widening we had east of here. So with the help of UDOT, we talked directly with Region 2. They sponsored an STP application to WFRC for $4.2 million. This was at the time about 50% of what we needed. As the project grew, it became about 40% of what we needed. But it was a stepping stone that we needed to really launch the project. In addition, in talking with our private partners, the Larry H. Miller Group, who owned the used car dealership where we had 40 feet of acquisition, was very supportive of the project. They have future redevelopment plans. They know how critical it is to get this intersection opened up for their redevelopment to take hold. So talking directly with their director of land acquisition and real estate, they committed to us in writing that if we got funding for this project, they would donate all of the needed right-of-way for this. That was 40 feet of take along their used car dealership. And as we continued to work through the project, they held firm to that commitment and did make that donation, 100% donation of, it was over an acre of ground. We went to the state legislature directly and were able to obtain $1 million in SB 268 for right-of-way. We put that directly towards the Holiday Oil we needed to buy. In addition, Salt Lake County in an interlocal through State Bill 277, we got the one-time capital funding from the quarter of a quarter tax that the county was spreading out. And so we coordinated with them to get originally $5 million, but we used some of that in a different project. And so there was $4.1 million left over that we were able to apply towards this intersection. And then we used some money from what we had left over in some of the other phases. All combined, our various sources came to a total funding of $10.4 million. If you include the donation from Larry H. Miller, right-of-way costs, including the donation from Miller, $3.7 million. construction 5.1, and then all of the miscellaneous environmental design acquisition team, construction management 1.6 million. So that all happened from 2017 through 2020, and we were able to kick this project off around Thanksgiving this year, this winter. We used this winter to do all of our utility relocation work, rebuild a retaining wall, get done what we could during the winter months. So we hit the ground running really hard this spring when the temps warmed up. Our contractor is Acme, and they've been making great progress. And as of June 8th, about a week ago, we went out and got some drone shots. Here's looking south towards that new U-turn that's being put in. The new signal arms are up and you can see the crews out working. And then this is where the widening begins. This is a new retaining wall that was built at the at-home property, what they've got torn up. Current traffic configuration is southbound only, so the contractor has room to work. Business community, once again, was critical in talking to them upfront about this. Once they got on board with the southbound only and recognized the value in reducing the extent of construction, for the most part, they're all dealing with it and not too upset. This is looking at the main intersection itself. Our contractor Acme's already built out this leg of the intersection with the 40 feet of take from Larry H. Miller through here, and then also squeezing that road right up against the apartment project as it tapers to existing. You can see what he did to get the southbound lane in while he's working on the rest of it. And then once they're done with this, they'll finish their widening on 90th, do a mill and overlay on 90th, move the medians and restripe the whole thing. We're looking at a completion at the end of August. And that is the summary of our 90th South Monroe project. Open for any questions.
Thanks, Ryan. This is a great project. I can't wait for it to be done. I got, as a guy who is at the Riot on a pretty regular basis, this last week, as the U.S. men's national team was in town, it was about the most traffic I have sat in probably 3 or 4 years. That it didn't help planning that game right at rush hour at 5 o'clock. But yeah, it was a joy. So we're going to be excited when this one's done, but it's a great project. Thanks for sharing that with us today.
Not a problem.
Okay, well, let's move on to item number 6. I'm going to go ahead and turn the time over to Wayne Bennion to talk federal transit.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. I just want to give a bit of context before we turn the time over to Hal Johnson, who's the project development manager at UTA. You know, has been mentioned during this meeting by several people, the great planning that's going on in the state and with the unified plan and getting both highway and transit and active transportation capital improvement projects identified a long time before they actually get built. We wanted today to give you some appreciation for all the work that UTA has done and continues to do in being so successful at getting federal dollars from the Federal Transit Administration. We've asked Hal to shed some light on some of the process elements for successfully competing for federal dollars for some of the transit capital improvement projects. Hal.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I've got a quick presentation, so I'll share that with you, and I will do my best to go through this very quickly. I've been working at UTA for 26 years now and done a lot of work in the project development space. So in the presentation I'm gonna do is give you a kind of a quick overview of the project development process. And this is kind of generalized. So you'll see some general information, but then I'll discuss how it applies to specifically. So kind of why do we develop transit capital projects? So the most important thing is enhancing the service for our customers, both our current customers as well as our future customers. We really want to support our local government partners that we work with. We look at trying to meet projected mobility demands, so making sure we size our systems appropriately for future demand. We'd love to see land use change happen around our projects. We've got some really fantastic examples in our region of land use change on the corridor up to the University of Utah, as well as on the S line. And then one of the most important things is kind of supporting the implementation of the regional transportation plan. So the regional transportation plans are really the driver for developing transit projects. So as was touched on earlier, we have a overall Utah unified plan that talks about active transportation, highway projects, transit projects, as well as corridor preservation. And then for UTA, we're primarily service the Mountainlands Association of Government area, as well as Wasatch Front Regional Council. And so the two MPO plans are really significant in helping us guide our investments. And so this is a quick roadmap graphic that I made to kind of help show the process we follow. So the construction photo there is actually of some of the work happening out at the airport for the airport station relocation.
Okay, Hal, just really quick, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but your slides are not progressing, just so you
they're know. They're not, oh, that's really good.
You can't see what you're looking at right now.
Okay, that's
thanks. Helpful. Oh, it's still not showing the slide, it's just showing your presentation title.
Okay, get back
to you. There we go.
Is it?
Now I can see it, yes.
Okay.
The project development roadmap. Yeah, there you go. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah.
I was just rolling. I guess I'll show you these slides really quick. So just the unified transportation plan and then the long-range plan. And then this is the roadmap slide that we've developed. So it kind of starts with the long-range plan. And out of that long-range plan is really kind of helping define the need for projects. So looking at the markets, looking at how it fits in as an overall system. And then based on the recommendations from the long-range plan, we would do either a feasibility study or an alternatives analysis to really flesh that potential project out in a little bit more detail. And under those alternatives analysis or feasibility study, we'll identify general kind of markets, terminus locations, costs for the project. Based on good findings from those studies, we would then initiate an environmental process, either locally or a federal environmental process. And under the environmental process, we would look at, there's generally, you know, 30 plus environmental factors that we look at to make sure it's not negatively impacting the community, as well as not negatively impacting the natural or built environment. Once we finish through the environmental process, we would work with our local government partners to develop memorandum of understanding for the project. And at that point, we would request entry into project development with the Federal Transit Administration. We'd have a NEPA hearing on the project, do final design, and FTA would be very involved with this in these steps of the process, and then develop operating agreements with the cities, the counties, UDOT, whoever's facilities we're using, railroad partners, get the grant from FTA or other entities, move into construction and then operation. So that's kind of the general roadmap that we would follow for the development of process. And depending on the nature of the project, this is generally a 3 to 10 year process to get all the way through these steps. And some of it depends on the nature of the project as well. And if there's funding available, that definitely helps move things forward more quickly. This next slide I've got is, you know, one of the things we really look at UTA is trying to get the right technology, the right transit mode, and the right markets. So if you think about, you know, like the Sugar House Street Line Corridor, you know, that isn't a market for Front Runner, for a big locomotive. If you look at, you know, like the front runner system, if we tried to run a streetcar on that system, would be too small. We you know, are moving more people than the cars can hold. So we really try to look at kind of where are people going to and from, and kind of how many people are making those trips, and be able to size the technology appropriately. So the graphic here that we put together, you know, generally these long trips are front runner or express bus make those trips. Kind of these medium range trips, you know, from say Farmington to Ogden, that may be made on front runner, or it could be made on other systems. It could be BRT. And then in Salt Lake County, we have a lot of light rail. And so the light rail trips generally are, you know, 1 to 7 miles that people travel on light rail. And then importantly, we have, you know, circulation projects. So like the S line and other projects where people are just trying to make those first last mile connections. So we really try to size the transit for the market and make sure it's meeting the needs and demands of specific markets. These are generally some generalized costs for different projects. So in the long range plan, there's a lot of enhanced bus projects that are identified. And so those are corridor based bus projects. So they're probably in the, you know, $15 to $30 million range. Streetcar BRT projects are generally in the $15 to $400 million range, depending on the size and the scope of the project. You know, light rail projects, $400 million to a couple billion dollars, depending on how, you know, size and scope of the projects. And then we don't have any kind of subway identified in our region. Maybe in the next iteration of the plan, it'll show up as a need. So the generally subway projects are super expensive, in the billions of dollars a mile. This is the federal funding kind of process we work through with the Federal Transit Administration. So as we're putting the projects together, having those feasibility studies done and the alternatives analysis, we would, in the environmental process, we're starting to initiate project development with FTA. And the top bar here is for capital projects that are greater than $300 million, or where we're seeking more than $100 million in federal funding. And in that process, we do the final design, get solid cost estimates, and finalize all the station locations, and then get a grant from FTA. The small starts process is for smaller projects. So earlier in the meeting, you guys touched on the Ogden BRT project. That's being funded through the small starts account. It's a simplified process. FTA has a lesser level of documentation analysis that's needed for that. But so this is the process we go through to kind of get the projects. We're working doing the environmental process as well as completing all the design, and then getting our contractors and boards, signing the grant agreement, then moving into construction. And this is the general rating process that FTA looks at, kind of for both small starts and new starts. You look at kind of the overall project effectiveness, kind of the ridership markets is covered in this part of it, the blue boxes. So we look at cost effectiveness, economic development, land use, that all feeds into it. The green boxes are covering the financial commitments. So FTA, they evaluate our financing to make sure we can cover the long-term operation and capital costs for the project and develop an overall rating for it. I'm going to skip through these slides pretty quick. So this is just showing the NEPA criteria. And then UTA, we have our own local NEPA process we follow for a locally funded project. So we like the outcomes we get from the NEPA process. So funding strategy wise, you know, that's really the key to drive these projects forward. So kind of identifying both the local money as well as the federal money and other grant opportunities to build a project. I included some financing tools. So there's a number of different financing tools through bonding activities that can be helped to use to finance a project, but we also need funding, which is generally coming through either grants or some of our local sales tax dollars. So this is a quick example of a project that and how it was funded. So this is actually the Tucson streetcar that's been in operation for a few years. But they won a Tiger grant. They got a small New Starts grant. They got some STP funds. Arizona DOT donated money. And then they had some local sales tax dollars. Cities put in some money. The water company put in some money. So it was generally a diverse funding commitment. We're seeing that more and more on our transit projects. Ogden BRT has a very diverse funding portfolio that was used to put that together. And then this last slide is probably the most important one of the presentation. And this is a slide that we developed to kind of help better explain the process. So we work both in the political and the technical world to advance these projects. So on the political side, we work a lot with municipal partners to make sure these are the right things, that the projects fit within what the municipalities would like to see with kind of their long-range plan. Beth touched on Bill Knowles. We do a lot of outreach and work with the business community. We want to make sure that this fits with the business community and their goals and expectations. And then on the technical side, we really do a lot working on the ridership, kind of costing and making sure that it's a good project. So if you don't have the political support and you don't have a good technical project, you won't get a project. So you have to have both really strong political support as well as business community support, and then have a technically sound project with good analysis, good costing. And so that's where it comes together, and you can get the funding in the end of the day. And so when I talk with other transits or other cities that are interested in developing projects, I always kind of focus on, you know, making sure you're, you know, finding the right markets, finding the right places that need service and improvements, and then kind of working both the technical as well as the political to make sure you can bring it together. So I think I'm a little bit over time, so I'm going to stop there and see if there's any questions.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. Mr. Chair, would that be all right?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Thank you. One of the things that Hal touched on his earlier slides was he was talking about the various modes and their relative costs and also their relative length of time in terms of that implementation. And I believe that everyone has seen that the discussion about the point of the mountain and the mode that ultimately became the locally preferred alternative. And that mode is a gold standard BRT, so a dedicated BRT. One of the things that was looked at in that particular location is actually also the increased ability to have access. And that meant having two stops versus one, which ultimately kind of drove that decision-making process. So there are some elements to that that have local input, and then the practicality of it. The ability to do rail include that in our elevation changes is kind of what made that distinction. And so I just kind of wanted to put that out there for everyone, just to kind of get some context for how Point of the Mountain ultimately ended out. So thanks, Hal. You do a great job as always. And he has so much institutional knowledge, and he's like, you know, he is like the guru of all of this. So just wanted to say that. Thanks.
Thank you, Beth.
Thanks, Beth. And thanks, Hal. Great presentation. Any other questions for Hal? Okay, well, that takes us to other business. I don't have any. Andrew, do you have anything else we need to add?
No, not unless Wayne does.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, well, our next meeting is August 19th. We plan to be live and in person at the WFRC offices. So unless something changes, plan on meeting us there. That is it for today. We need a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right, Clint seconded this. We're done, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you.